Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and there is an exhibition now at City Hall called You and I, Henry, A Journey Through Baltimore and Beyond from the Lenses of Three Generations, and it's on view now till March 13th of three of Baltimore's incredible photographers, all part of one family. And two of those men are in the studio with us. Webster Phillips is grandson of photographer Irving Henry Phillips, freelance photographer, music producer at Above Ground Studios. And Irving Phillips Jr. is the son of the great photographer Irving Henry Julius and former staff photographer, photographer at The Sun and The Afro. Gentlemen, good to have you both with us.
Oh,
it's great
you,
to be here.
You.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can log on to our Facebook pages. You can write us an email, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. But please, call if you can, 410-319-8888. So this is really an honor to have you on the studio. Your father, grandfather were amazing, as an amazing man who broke all kinds of ground in this country. And so talk about how you started this idea of putting this photographic exhibit crosses the generations of the Phillips family for Baltimore. How did that begin, Webster?
A while back, we did a show some years back, and over the last couple of years, we've been digitizing a portion of his archive. And I actually gave a photograph to a friend of mine, Karan Brace, who works down at City Hall. And she was taking it into work one day, and Jeannie Davis, who's the curator, saw the photograph. And that's basically how the show came about down at City Hall. But we've been planning to do something with the three generations, because it's been a while since we had done something. And since
right.
we had a portion digitized, we decided now was a great time. Black History Month was open, so what better time to display the work?
Right. It's good to have this any month.
Yeah.
All the time.
All year round.
All year round.
What was the picture you took that in the show?
It was the young girl roller skating by Gilmore Holmes at Spray
Court. Oh, Spray Court. Yeah.
And that was whose photo?
It was my grandfather's photo.
And when was that photo taken? Around when?
50s.
Yeah, probably mid-50s.
But you know what? He had all these 4 or 5 negatives, and they were never cataloged. My father used to tell me all the time, you know, I'd say something to him. He said, I got that downstairs. Oh, I got that downstairs, whether it was sports or whatever, because like he followed Jackie Robinson in 47. He got a picture of him hitting a home run and a couple black people in the background. The stadium was full. And he's got all kinds of but – here's the thing that used to get me was like the picture of Billie Holiday coming out the liquor store.
Oh, that on Pennsylvania Avenue back in the 40s. What a great shot.
It took me four years to figure out that was Billie Holiday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, as you look through the negatives,
you could
get positives of them on a thing my son got. And but that's like Richard Wright. He changed so much over the years. Like, you know, when he was younger and then 20 years later.
Right.
So it was just really interesting, but so much of the what got me was he really what I remember the stories he told me, you know, and just like Webb was reminding me this morning, he said, you know, I was thinking about sports. He was thinking about Vida Blue, the pitcher for the A's.
Right.
I had my brother Martin out there with me. He's about 12 years old. He's 35 now. And Vita Blue signed his hat. No, he's 45, 50 now. You 35. That's right. Webb's 35. I'm sorry.
Somebody's 35.
Well, I'm 70 years old now, so I wouldn't put it up to that. But anyway, I remember us sitting there. He loved baseball, you know. So, and Vita Blue was just tremendous left-handed. I don't think there's been one like him. And so Vita Blue was cool. He took his hat off. He had everything off, but he was just in his underwear with his hat off. So Webb pointed to his hat, he took and signed it and threw it to him. And we were sitting there. So I had to run back to make deadline for the Sun Papers for the Bulldog Edition. They call it the Bulldog Edition, which came out like 10 o'clock, 9:30, 10.
Right.
It's all different there. But and then we were on the way back. We were going down St. Paul Street. And I looked around. I said, where's the hat, man? He left the hat. I think about that hat today, you know. But anyway, it's a lot of stuff.
So there's a couple things I really want to explore. I mean, because these three generations. But let me go back to the first generation and talk a bit about how Irving Phillips Sr. got started in photography, where that began, who he was. If we can both kind of reflect. You knew your grandfather as well, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know well, he probably knows this one better than I do.
I'm sure.
It started the Afro.
Yeah. Oh, his brother Frank was a photographer and engraving and all that, because you do all the engraving photography, then it goes to engraving. Then they make the metal round place and they put it on the press. So he hired my father as a photographer, you know.
And what year are we talking about now?
Oh, it's 40s, when he got out the war.
So Irving Phillips, your father,
senior,
was in World War II.
Yeah.
As a photographer or as a soldier?
No, he was a soldier. Uh-huh. But he took pictures. He was taking pictures then, too. Because mm-hmm. he got some... When I look at a few things, he got somebody to take pictures of him, you know, with all the equipment had on. It was totally different than all the other World War II equipment I saw people had on from the
right.
blankets and all. And I said, damn, why have I ever seen this before, you know? But anyway, his brother married one of Carl Murphy's, who's the founder of the Afro. She had five daughters.
Right.
So his oldest daughter, Betty, my Uncle Frank married her. She was the president.
Right.
So Frank had some power there, you know, but he was a real smart guy, you know what I mean? He really was. I mean, he read all the time. Only thing I remember him was smoking cigarettes and always reading magazines and everything and questioning me and telling me all this detailed stuff about stuff. Half of it I never even knew.
So your father, that's how he got into the Afro?
Yeah, he wound up being a photographer there, so... It's interesting. And then I would go around my father a lot, and I'd take my son around with me, you know, a lot.
Because, I mean, his work, I'm curious, as a young man, what the work of your grandfather did for you.
It really opened up your eyes to really how things were back then. You know, usually you see something in a movie or, you see a photograph here, a photograph there. But you really don't see the everyday life. You don't see the guy going in the store. You don't see the kids playing.
Right.
You don't see the, for instance, the Afro cooking school where, you know, you have a room of 400 or 500 people come in, you know, to give a lesson on how to cook a meal. And at the end of the day, you go home with a grocery bag with all of the ingredients and everything in it to make the meal. Kind of stuff like that. And it really opens up your eyes to how things were going back then economically. And also it you know, it really is like every negative that I scan really is I'm looking directly through the eyes, you know, of my grandfather. And after scanning, right now I have about 10,000 images scanned.
Of your grandfather's?
Yeah.
Four or five negatives.
Yeah, just strictly from the 4x5 negatives.
What does that mean by 4x5 negatives for listeners who don't understand that?
It's a large format negative, 4x5 inches, and from an old press camera. And kind of camera where, you know, he might go out in a day and only have 4 or 8 shots in a day to get what he needed to bring back to the newspaper. So it's just a large format shot, but it gives really detailed and crisp shots. You know, it's nothing like 35mm, nothing like digital these days.
You know, 35 is like that, you know.
Right. And so photography has changed so much.
Oh,
and I mean, a lot of the photographs are yours in this exhibit as well, right?
Mine are from
in black and white,
35mm.
Right.
They're all 35. Mine are, but I took a lot of 120s too. But we haven't even gotten into that dealing with that.
So I one of the things I think that it's so important about the work in this exhibit, and the exhibit itself in some sense is limited. You can't have all the photographs I think you'd like to have on, but
it's tough.
But you have so much to work with. From the three of you, over three generations, one of the things I told you as you walked in that struck me about the photographs from the ones that Irving Phillips Sr. took to the ones you took, Irving Phillips Jr., to the work you're doing, Webster, is this arc for me of seeing the Baltimore community when it was – how can I say this right? That the photographs your grandfather and father took – and you took earlier, were of a community that was whole, with life in it, and young people roller skating, and people hanging out, and houses full of flowers, and people in their clean blocks, and life on the street. And then these other photographs, some of you took and you've taken, that of young people today sitting on a stoop in an empty kind of hollowed out building. Looking at boarded up houses. It's just... That spread just really affected me looking at what that says.
Yeah, you wonder what happened
to
it, you know? Yeah. But it's interesting because just like when my son does certain things, I said, damn, what did I lose? I'd never do that to my father, say that to my father. But I'm wondering what I lost, you know, even though I tell him a lot of stuff anyway, you know, but there's still a difference. You lose a lot, but that's the whole thing about photography. When you capture the moment, you can actually see what happens to the culture. But the main thing is, like, the young kids now, if they look at the pictures, even the poorest kids on the street, you can see that they respected themselves just by how they carried themselves, what they did, and what they were doing, you know. But it's just very interesting. That's the thing about capturing a moment.
Right.
And you see how times, when the times change, you know.
So I'd like folks to join us here, 410-319-8888. Your thoughts, and if you've seen the exhibit, let us know. Many of you who listen to this program have grown up with the Afro-American, grown up with these many of these photographs. Your feel for that, your sense of that. Maybe you were in some of the photographs and want to shout that out. 410-319-8888. We're going to say what, Webb?
Well, we began to do, a few years back, I was teaching photography at Baltimore Talent Development High School, and I was working with a history teacher there, Gerald Baker, and he was using the photographs as a, you know, as an aid to teach the students history. And once they got a look at, you know, how Baltimore looked back then versus how it does now. And there's still a lot of thriving neighborhoods in Baltimore now.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you roll down the street and everything is pristine. But at the same time, we began to look at the transition, and everyone has a different story on the who, what, when, why, or how we got to now. But we started a documentary. It was called We Used to Scrub Our Steps. And it began to look at the transition from, you know, a community that was thriving during times of struggle versus, you know, the transition to now. And what we began to see was after integration, a lot of people got opportunity to move out of these neighborhoods, to go to colleges and different places out of town. And then when they thrived and moved to other places, what would happen was they weren't coming back to the communities. And that was kind of part of the beginning of how you get, you know, a block of abandoned houses, you know, when a family member is 60 or 70 years old and his son is off somewhere and they've got their life, and the parent says, hey, you know what, I'm gonna move down to Florida and retire, and I'm gonna sell my house to this realtor or this investor, and the house becomes vacant. And then, you know, economically also, what you would see is just the money goes outside of the community, and that was part of why a lot of these smaller communities just kind of, you know, guess fell apart somewhat.
Yeah, and I think that you all capture that in incredible ways. And that people are calling in. Shall we? Let me get a couple of callers.
Yeah, go ahead.
At 410-319-8888. And we talked to Webster Phillips III and Irvin Phillips Jr., two great photographers, and in the lineage starting with Irvin Phillips Sr., who was a great photographer for the Afro as well. And all these men are great photographers. That exhibit taking place now at City Hall of three generations of work that talk to us about what this community is. 410-319-8888. Carl in Laurel, Maryland, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Mark. You
good
always
morning.
have a wonderful show.
Thank you.
And this is another one in that line. I want to say thank you very much to the Phillips family. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Keeney Harris was a staff photographer for the Pittsburgh Courier.
Right.
And he's had an exhibit in the in Pittsburgh, and I look forward to checking out this particular exhibit showing the life of the life and times in Baltimore.
You know, Carl, what you just said, hey, I mean, you can write me an email about that at mark@steinershow.org. I'd like to know more about that, Mark with a C, because what Carl just said to me, it just made me think. It just popped in my head here to imagine that, thinking of all of the storied black newspapers from across America, Chicago Defender, The Courier, the Amsterdam News, the Afro papers, all the papers across America. And each one of those papers had an Irving Phillips in it. And each one of those communities has sons and granddaughters who of that original photographer who also may be photographers. Can you imagine what that lineage might be if it was all together to see the story of America?
He got a... His son, well, before he died, I think, if I got it correctly, the Hines people put a lot of money into buying all his stuff.
Hines ketchup people.
Yeah.
Right.
And the most unique thing about the Afro is they had a Jersey, Philly, Richmond, North Carolina, South Carolina.
Washington, D.C.
D.C. And they had all those different things. So that's why they sent us around the country, because they had a national hookup where, not that the other ones didn't, but we followed, like, when I got out the war, When I got out of Vietnam, I followed King up and down south, you know. And my father stayed here. But it was very interesting, you know, the couple of years I followed him before they killed him. Well, not to kill him, but assassinated him, as they say. But Teenie Harris is very interesting because, but a lot of stuff what we have are not in the show at City Hall. Like, we didn't do anything from the March on Washington or King's death or so many things, you know. All the stars I covered, you know, I remember Stevie Wonder had a party after doing a show down at Civic Center. And we were in the Hilton, and he was walking into all kinds of doors, and he was complaining about this hotel ain't like a lot of other hotels. A lot of people were there, a lot of stars were there. And my brother-in-law was with me, and I was there with Al Rutledge from Afro, and Stevie was so hyped because he just read his first Braille book, and he was talking to my brother-in-law about it. So we were sitting in his – I got a picture of my brother-in-law sitting in. He's a dentist. Eugene sitting in on the bed with Stevie. And Stevie's just really excited about his first reading, his first novel.
Right.
Anyway, it's a lot of different stories. A lot of the collections
from a lot of the photographers, what ended up happening is a lot of people acquire these collections, and then the history isn't necessarily made available in a large portion to the public or, you know, to be able to be used for educational tools. And that's a big part of what we're trying to do with this collection is make it available online for people to be able to go online, check out galleries, get lessons about the historical aspects of the photos. So really it can be used really to show the history and to tell a story of, you know, where we've come and where we've been for the last 50 plus years.
No, I think that, and I'm just curious, I think we have to go to break here. Is it time for a break? We got time for another caller. What do you want to do? One more caller? I want to explore just, Connie, you just hung up. Please call back. I want to answer your question about white neighborhoods and photography. I saw you want to talk about that. So call us back at 410-319-8888.
I'm Mark.
But Debbie in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning, Debbie.
How are you?
Very well. Welcome.
I was fortunate enough to be present at the presentation at City Hall.
Uh-huh.
And one of the photographs that really resonated with me was the one where the kids were skating in the street. As a child, that's what we did. We had fun. We had recreation. And I recounted to one of my sons that...
Could you do a split eagle?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Could you do a split eagle? You know, we're both... I'm just messing with you, okay?
But when they were at the school and they had roller skating parties, all the parents wanted to know, how did you know how to skate like that?
Yeah, you did have to do it, you know, learn how to do it.
Absolutely.
And we used to take those number fives and take out the hot box and put it on a board with a thing, and that's what let you turn, you know, if you know what I'm talking about. So it's got to be some. Go ahead, Debbie. I'm sorry.
And I would encourage many, many people, if they hadn't gone down to City Hall to see it, that they would do it. And
that's the best thing about photography. You know, it sort of, it gives you those different feelings
right.
You can't get
right.
anywhere else. When you look at something, it really captures the moment. And that's what Henry did, and it was very interesting.
So before we go to break here, Debbie says, tell us very quickly what that exhibit meant for you before we hit the break.
Oh, it meant everything to me. It brought back so many memories, things that you just don't have in your mind on a regular basis that you've forgotten, and you see that, and it makes a connection immediately for you. Yes, it was nice.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and I just want to say hello to Webb. I know him personally.
Hello,
and,
Debbie.
Hi, how are you?
My girlfriend? Who's Debbie? No, she's too old. Let me shut up.
So, Debbie.
Debbie, thanks so much for the call. I'm glad you joined
us.
We take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to pick up Connie in Charles Village, and Webster Phillips and Irving Phillips Jr. are here with us to talk about this great exhibit now at City Hall. So please stay with us. We'll be right back. You'll hear more. And on our way to break here, we're hearing Really Love by D'Angelo and the Vanguard, who was born on this day in 1974. We'll be right back.
after midnight, out in the moonlight. Just
welcome
like
back. This is Mark Steiner. You listen to the Mark Steiner Show here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM. And that was Patsy Cline. That's Walking After Midnight, released on this day in 1957. And we are here with Irving Phillips Jr., son of the great photographer. He's also a great photographer, Irving Henry Phillips Sr. Irving is the former staff photographer for the Sun and the Afro. And Webster Phillips III is with us, who's grandson of Irving Henry Phillips, and a freelance photographer who also works as a music producer at Above Ground Studios. And you at 410-319-8888. Please join us. Connie in Charles Village, you're on the air. Welcome.
I'm just really curious as to whether anyone has ever looked at the changes in the lower-income white neighborhoods around Baltimore, because in the most obvious answer to why the neighborhoods of color have declined is more housing options for the more successful members of the community.
I'm sorry. Finish what you're saying, Connie.
I'm sorry, what?
I just finished what you were saying.
I was just curious as to whether anyone has ever looked at the white neighborhoods that were lower income, because those people had, if they had the resources, they had the options to move out.
Right. Well, there were a number. There was people like Aubrey Bodine.
Yeah. My father, what tickles me is everybody used to say Pigtown, right? And I used to tell my father about it, and he showed me pictures of the pigs. They used to run up and down the street.
That's why they call it Pigtown.
Yeah.
To the market.
And that's why they call it. And then along Wilkins Avenue, they were the stockyards. And, I remember the stockyards that ran the same length of Wilkins Avenue, about 7-8 blocks.
Right.
And when they still had the cows there, and then they broke them down.
Right.
But I used to take a lot of white kids down Pigtown everywhere, all over East, West Baltimore.
We have photos of a lot of the different parts of the city, and one thing that we definitely one thing that we definitely aimed to include in the documentary that we started, that we used to scrub our steps, was really telling the story of Baltimore, because, like I was mentioning earlier, everyone has a different story on why. So, you know, whether it was the industry leaving, whether it was, you know, more housing options for different people, whether it was white flight in some cases, you know, there are a bunch of these things. And we're definitely looking for people to tell all those different sides of the stories, and also looking for other photographs of those neighborhoods. But there is a portion of photographs that are from those neighborhoods that she mentioned.
And there were lots of photographers in this town that took those pictures. And I think that there's so much, as you said earlier, that there were, what did you say, Irving, that there were like 10,000 photos you have?
Is that, well, that's just four by five. But
We scanned 10,000, but that's just a fraction.
You got another.
That's just a fraction of the collection.
10 or 15,000. That's just four by five negatives. That's not 30,000 120s. There's a million of them, I guess.
So between the three of you,
it's a lot to tackle.
Between three of you and what? Three of you and 75 years worth of photographs.
And my father, me, and Webb.
It's overwhelming sometimes.
And I saved a lot from the Sun paper. A lot got thrown out, but I saved a lot of mine, the original negatives.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So whenever they were finished with them after 7 years, I think. After 7 years, I think. But I used to take mine out of the trash can and take them home, and the dates will be on them too, you know.
That's phenomenal.
But I'm still looking through them. And all those just sports pictures, you know, it's like.
Yeah, because you and he both did a lot of individual sports people, entertainers, and some really unique kind of poses.
Oh, my father's got every entertainer you can think of, but he's got really nice stuff. He's got Louis Armstrong in the dressing room with a girl, you know, with his own. And I mean, not just on stage, you know.
He
brought Bobby Boyd and Connie Johnson to my mother's house to eat, you know. And, man, were they clean. I mean, when you look at these pictures.
We have an email here from Boston. Arthur Michael Weaver, who is one of the – from Baltimore, grew up here, and he's one of the world's most famous poets. And he wrote this email, and he said, "It is a small world indeed. Back in 1982, I believe it was Irving Phillips Jr., worked with me on a Sun article for the Sunday magazine. It was called East is East and West is West. We rode through two sides of the black community, taking pictures of folks we found, and Irving did some of his own. I wrote the article, of course. It was my time as a freelancer for The Sun while I was working at Procter & Gamble as a warehouseman. Seeing his name here along with his family brings back good memories. I hope he remembers that article, or maybe not. It was 33 years ago, my God, time flies. I ordered a reprint of the article a few years ago, and it's hanging in my office at Simmons College, where he teaches. It was the most popular piece I did in those days of freelancing from 1985 when I left Bmore. But be well, and we have lots of snow up here.
Hey, thanks, man. Ah, gracious. I'm going to look that up. It'll take me a minute to think about it, but I know I'll remember you and whatever, because always remember people's style, you know, whoever I'm working with. There's something about the style that stays in my memory, you know, when I watch him.
Well, you'd love Afa's work. He's an amazing poet, just an amazing poet. He's just one of the biggest poetry awards in the world just late last year, and it's just an amazing guy. I'll have to turn you all onto his work. And,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't believe when he said that was 30 some years.
That was 33 years ago.
it's ironic.
So, what do you think you take this from here?
Hopefully, we'll have a large portion of the database online and available for teachers and people to use as a learning aid to kind of get the kids on the history. We also are making the photographs available for licensing and also
available
to collectors and also a portion available for people just for decorative art.
Do you own them collectively as a family? Is that how you work it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
That's like, I will never forget the first time I saw Stevie Wonder and James Brown at the Civic Center. Stevie Wonder had band behind him, Motown band behind him. Uh-huh. Must have been 34 pieces. And man, he was little Stevie Wonder then.
Little Stevie, this is back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, he ran on the stage and the announcer talking trash. I mean, he talking more trash than when he talk now, these rappers, you know. I mean, he was talking faster than that because that's what got everybody hyped up. And Stevie ran out on the stage, and he just put his arm, and he hooked his arm. So Stevie, you know, swung around a couple times, and then there was a chair there. And Stevie jumped from the back of the chair to the front, the old, chair.
Right, right.
And I said, man, someone didn't break his neck. And then he stopped playing Fingertips right away.
That was
and
the song,
Stevie,
Fingertips.
And I got pictures of him doing that. And I said, man, if I ever put these pictures up, and then he would go back and play the drums and this and that. And then I think all those pictures, all those people I got who are famous, you know, from Oscar Peterson to Stevie Wonder. I remember when I covered Oscar Peterson because I love the piano. And anyway, let me shut up. But there's so many people.
It's cool.
There's so many stars and tax players and all that my father took and singers. And
I could just think Carl Carrington, I think it was the guy who just called in earlier, just emailed in saying, great show as always. Here's a link to Teenie Harris Archive at the Carnegie Museum of Art. So I'll share that with you all. Have $1 million a day. So I'll share that with you all. I mean,
I hate to say it, but my father's got a ton more stuff than Teenie Harris.
Oh, he may, but I'm just saying it's cool that, you know, all this is connected.
Yeah, a lot of people.
I know your father was prolific.
A lot of people mentioned Teenie Harris and his work, so I'm definitely somewhat familiar with his work. A lot of, depending on where people are, they always kind of shout out the person in their town that they, you know, with,
right.
You know, that
his son sold, right. No, right. Teenie Harris sold his thing to somebody for like $4,000, but his son got it back, and then Hines bought it for a few million and gave it to Pennsylvania, you know. But he's got a lot of nice stuff. I was just trying to plug my father.
No, man,
that's
why we're here, right?
Because he's got so much stuff. But
no, I think that
like we got to do a show on the March on Washington and just civil rights leaders, and we got to do a show on segregation.
This
I
tried to keep the range of photographs somewhat vague.
So you curated the show?
Yeah, yeah. Along with Jeannie Davis down at City Hall. But
she's nice.
We're trying to keep, you know, like a lot of people say, well, hey, why didn't you show that picture of Red Fox? Or why didn't you show the picture of this person that? But we try to give a large range of the photographs and then hopefully in the future be able to kind of get more, dig deeper into certain themes and certain particular aspects of the collection.
I mean, I was thinking about the great entertainers and that you've just that you know that you've been describing, Irving and Webb as well, that and all the kind of world that was captured by the three of you over these 75 years. I mean, that's mind-boggling when you think about where this begins.
I got shots
right?
of you on Charles Street with somebody. I forget
look
one
out
of
now.
My friends.
Wait a minute. Who was I with? When was it?
Y'all were in the studio, and I took the picture, and anyway, let me shut up.
I don't want to see that picture. So, but I can't you just imagine a whole piece of this with with music and sound.
Oh, we need a sponsor.
It's interactive.
You know? Yeah.
Interactive kind of stuff.
That's so much work.
What you all have is just
there's so many possibilities with the photographs, and that's why it was really endless and really what we are trying to do now is we were like for this show we actually with the help of a few Above Ground Studios and Metropolitan Information Systems we sponsored this last show, but we've been doing everything basically just kind of out of our own pocket as far as even cataloging. It took me about 2.5 years every day, 9 to 5 scanning to get to this 10,000. So we kind of just had to step back from everything to get that. But what we're also trying to do now is actually we had our first workshop Monday down at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center where we had members of the community and students come in to try to identify a lot of things and people and places in the photos that we don't know to try to add to the history. So when it is made available online, the history is really strong and right there with it.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it just affects. Go ahead.
When I first started the museum in Washington, that's before it was built. I forget the lady's name. She was
Carolyn
Hart. Nice lunch, too. But she gave me these books and the files to put the negatives in when I was looking through all the stuff. And I must have filed a ton of stuff, you know. But they really helped me out at the beginning, you know.
The museum in D.C., that's yeah. interesting.
And they call it a museum because it's a newspaper, you know.
Yeah, it's a great place, a museum.
But they were talking about, like, I got a 8x10 camera my father has, you know. And he's got a 5x7 camera, too, you know, those big, with the stand. Anyway, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking about the title of the place itself, You and I, Henry. Where'd that come from?
That actually came from a friend of mine, Nate Middleman, because he was saying that he was like the I, Henry, and he was like, the show is really like you and I. It's like you and I, Henry. It's like you're really there with you while taking the photos.
You and I, Henry. That kind
exactly.
of thing, right?
Right. You and I, Henry.
And Nate is, he's, what do you call it?
He's
this
a
guy, he's an engineer. He has Above Ground Studios.
That's where you work?
Yeah, we share a workspace over in East Baltimore.
Okay, cool. Well, this is phenomenal. I encourage everybody to see this exhibit.
Thanks a lot, man.
And I would really love to continue this conversation with you all sometime soon, because I think that there's so much knowledge and history and creativity in the Phillips Gene Pool here.
Appreciate it. Well, I definitely want to leave some contact info for anyone who's interested in checking out the photographs. We'll be at the Downtown Cultural Arts Center on the 23rd, which is a Monday, from 3 to 7 p.m., and that's 401 North Howard Street. And if you want to set up a private meeting to take a look at some photographs, maybe you might have a family member. They might have been photographed by my grandfather or my father or myself.
He's got tons of stuff, weddings.
You can reach me at ihenryphillipsphoto@gmail.com, or you can search on Facebook, ihenryphillipsphoto, and we'll be introducing a new photograph daily with hopes of trying to recognize some of the people, places, and things in the photographs.
He's got thousands of pictures of choirs and...
Yeah, I want to see this. This is great.
You know, people getting married and everything, all kinds of stuff.
And I want to see that picture of me you got on Charles Street. I hope that was when I was, you know, tearing up Charles Street and getting arrested. I hope it was some other time. But it's good to have you all here with us. Irving Phillips Jr., a son of the great photographer.
Thank you, man.
Irving Henry Phillips, also a great photographer. He's formerly a staff photographer with the Sun and the Afro. Webster Phillips III, grandson of Irving Henry Phillips, a freelance photographer who helped curate this exhibit at City Hall now. He's a music producer at Above Ground Studios. And You and I, Henry, A Journey Through Baltimore and Beyond from Behind the Lens of Three Generations, is on view now through March the 13th at the City Hall Courtyard Galleries, 100 North Holiday Street. Do not miss it. There's more coming for this incredible family, and I'm glad they had a chance to come in and share this with you all and grace our studios today. Good to see you. Thank you
Thanks
both
a lot.
For coming.
It was definitely a pleasure.
Thanks,
folks, do not go away. We're going to take a very brief break we're going to come back looking at If You Were Mayor. On our way out, it's That Shoplifters of the World Unite by the Smiths, which hits number one today in 1987. We will be right back with our guests talking about arts, gentrification, the future of the city. If you were mayor of Baltimore, stay with us. We'll be right back. Shoplifters of the world.